My guests today are Death to Anders, returning to Is Good with a brand new album. We're going to start by playing the title track, Fictitious Business, off of this album, and then we'll get into some interview and some live stuff. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Back on Is Good on killradio.org, hanging out with Death to Anders. How's it going, guys?
What's up?
Word.
Welcome back to Kill Radio. I think last time I had you guys on the show was I think it was October of 06. You guys had Punctuate the Calamities was your album that you were promoting, and you guys have been through some evolutions since then, some different bandmates and a lot of performances, and now you have a new album. Why don't we just start for people who aren't already familiar with your work, just sort of kind of go around the room and tell me who you are and what you bring to the band.
Can I go first?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
My name is Rob Danson. I'm a singer and guitar player for Death to Anders.
My name is Nick. I'm the same.
I'm John Brockle, and I'm the drummer.
I'm Pete DiBiasio. I play the bass.
Let me ask John first. Tell me what it's like sort of being a part of the band, knowing that they killed their last drummer.
Oh, well, no one told me that. I said he moved to New York. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, you know, getting the job in the band was a real effort on my part. I mean, I had to learn 10 songs and, you know, compete against another drummer for the job. And so thankfully it all worked out in my favor in the end. But, you know, 2007 was a super busy year and a lot of fun. We played a ton of shows and, you know, hopefully 2008 is going to be, you know, just as busy, if not busier, you know.
And when you started playing with the band, did you sort of immediately have a sense that you knew you understood the music, or did you kind of bring your own flavor to it?
Actually, when I first heard the band, I was like, there's no way I can do this, because listening to their last drummer, Anders, he was, you know, he's a really good jazz drummer, and I thought, this is not the kind of stuff I can play, you know, this isn't going to be something I can do. But Peter, you know, somebody I've played music with for years in LA, suggested that I at least try it out, you know, and so I did, and it worked out by bringing my style of drumming to this band. I think it sort of maybe just helped it structure, keep everything in line a little bit better, maybe, and yeah, luckily it worked out.
What kind of drumming background had you come from?
Really, my whole background is all straightforward 4/4 rock and roll drumming. You know, nothing too fancy, and it's always been like a less is more kind of thing. You know, and that's always been my attitude playing the drums. So I just didn't know if that would really apply in this case, but I think it does now, you know, so for sure.
And for the rest of you guys, how has John becoming a part of the band changed the way you perform, the way you write songs? How's it affected the evolution of Death to Anders?
It definitely, I mean, I think his background works perfectly for what we do. With Anders, it was more of like a kind of like a freestyle jazz type of thing, that which was really cool, and it really helped with especially with the first album, and it kind of gave us our own, like, a really kind of off-kilter specific sound. But the more stuff that Rob and I have written, there's a lot of harder stuff, a lot of more dynamic levels, like really soft and really loud, and we needed somebody that could to definitely kind of keep up with the rock aspect of what we were doing, as opposed to just, you know, what we've been used to, you know.
Would you say there's any sort of one thing that's different sonically in Death to Anders now from the last album?
The rhythm section.
Yeah, it's really, if I could sum it up in one word, it would be energy. There's a lot more energy, especially with Pete and John together. I mean, they've had a long chemistry together with playing in different bands. And Pete was in the band for about a year before John was. But when they both got in together, just the energy level just blew up. And, you know, like Nick was saying, there's some parts that are really soft and really melodic, but then there's other parts where we really peak and get huge, and it's the rhythm section, the drums and the bass that really drive that.
And usually it takes, like, you know, a while for the rhythm section, for any band in general, to kind of like sync up to the way each other plays, you know, and they didn't really have to do that because they played in like two or three other bands together before this one. So
Pete, just sort of share how that worked for you. I mean, the relationship between the bass player and the drummer in a rock band is a little bit different from the way the bass player, you know, relates to the rest of the band. You guys have to communicate and so forth.
It's important. It has to do with having played with John as long as I did. We don't have to refer to each other consciously. It's just sort of a pattern we fall into. It's like playing with your brother as opposed to someone you just met. You know, it's a link. And so that helps quite a bit.
Awesome. Are you guys ready to jump into a live song?
Cool.
Yeah. What are you guys going to play for us first?
What are you doing?
Camera Lens, right?
Okay, we're playing a song called Camera Lens.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guests are Death to Anders. Here we go.
Deep inside this canyon, the canyon with the stone walls for my head. Ink blot, real time endings, endings with no middle, endings with no end.
Great start to the show. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guests are Death to Anders. myspace.com/deathtoanders. Is that the place to go for all the latest up-to-date info on you guys?
Yeah, that's it right now.
So I heard you guys talking before the show that your album is just about ready to be put out into the ether. Is that true?
Yeah, we're picking it up today, and we're picking up the copies today.
I got the call today that we can pick it up from the plant. Which is great. We were I was getting pretty worried that it wasn't going to be ready by our CD release, which is this Tuesday, and but they got it done, so it's awesome.
And how long was that process for you guys putting together an album?
Actually, this one went really fast, I think. We started recording in October, like October 3rd or something like that, and we went into the studio with Dave Newton, who's our producer and mixer and engineer, and we recorded with him for 8 days, and then we brought the tracks over to my apartment. We recorded a couple other things, like we recorded Sarah from the Happy Hollows, Charlene from One Trick Pony, and then Todd McLaughlin on a couple songs.
Instruments and stuff.
They've all been on this show.
Various instruments, and then we just had it mixed. It got mixed in about 4 or 5 days, mastered in 1 day. I mean, the whole process was, you know, it started in October, and now it's, you know,
January.
So that's like 4 months. I hate you.
Do you guys feel comfortable in the studio? Do you like that? Or do you prefer to be on stage doing a live performance?
Well, it's different. It's different, man, because, I mean, you have so much, in my opinion, there's so much more freedom in the studio to be extremely creative, you know. I mean,
if you make a mistake, you can just, you know, go redo it.
And really, you have unlimited, I should say, possibilities, really. I mean, you know, you can do whatever you want to a track. You can lay down the song, as opposed to when you're live, there's constraints. You know, you're limited to the hands that you have, you know. Four members can only do so much.
Plus there's all these people looking at you.
Yeah.
Did you guys sort of get a sense of, you know, direction you wanted to take your music in based on your experience performing live? I know you guys perform a lot and, you know, have a lot of interaction with your audience and a lot of interaction with other local bands. Did that influence you in any way?
Well, what I can say is, I mean, not only do we perform a lot, but we also see a lot of bands. And there's a lot of bands that we've seen live where everything, like all the songs, it might not be on their albums, but when they play live, a lot of the times it's the same volume, the same speed, the same rhythm over and over again. And all the songs might be great, but after a couple songs, you know, you've heard it before. And it's not necessarily the bands that we're affiliated with now. Like, a lot of the Silver Lake bands aren't like that, but when we first started playing, the bands that we would see were a lot like that. And I guess we kind of just took a mental note from that and said, you know, there's something called dynamics, and we have to really show that. Play loud, then play soft, play
showmanship
slow
in
and
general
fast.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, regardless of what the songs are like, sometimes people are just, bands are just boring to watch on stage. No offense to you boring bands out there.
No offense to all you creeps. Well, I know it's one thing, just listening to your new album, since you mentioned the dynamics, I mean, it seems to have always been a thing with Death to Anders to never do the same thing twice. And that's, even within a song, you never seem to do the same thing twice. Kind of, you know, like no song is just, oh, this is their quiet song or this is their loud song. It goes through many different movements, many different changes. Is that in any way connected to the lyrical content of the songs, what the songs are about?
Possibly. I mean, I'll let you answer that, Rob, but I think it's more just the fact that I'm like this close to being ADD, so my attention span is like, you know, like a flash cube, so you gotta mix it up, you know, otherwise I get bored.
So you get bored very easily even with your own work if you don't change it up?
Yeah, right. You know, I mean, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, nobody else is going to, so you gotta make sure that you're, you know.
I think I was in middle school, and I had a 4-track, and I wrote a song that I was really proud of, and I had every week I would have a guitar lesson, and I brought it to my guitar teacher just thinking that I would just blow his mind with this song, and I played it for him, and I thought it was awesome, and he, you know, took one listen to it, and he looked at me, and he was like, "That's really boring." And I was like,
oh, man.
And it really shocked me. I was also a little kid.
And then he started,
like,
dating my mom. It was really.
Yeah. But no, he was like. He, I mean, he flat out told me. He was like, it's boring. And he's like, this is why. He's like, it starts at one point, but it doesn't go up or down from there. It's like a flat line. And you have to picture your song as kind of like a roller coaster with its ups and downs and its peaks and its, you know, swells and dips and all that stuff. And that, I mean, he was brutally honest, and I'm glad for that because it changed everything about what I wrote after that. And I, you know, think of songs in that way now.
I bet there are probably a lot of kids with a lot of potential who gave up the music biz right then and there.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we listen to another track from your new album? What do you recommend?
Two.
Yeah, right. So this song is a song called Ghost Rock. It's probably one of our fastest, craziest, noisiest songs on the album.
Cool. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guests are Death to Anders. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org. My guests are Death to Anders. And we were talking a little bit about your writing process before. One of the things that's unique about Death to Anders is there's no one front man. There's no one person who does the writing. There's no necessarily lead singer. Tell me a little bit about how the band is structured.
I don't know. You want to take that, Pete? I mean, you take that one, man.
Oh, well, you mean divide it up into percentages in terms of input, that sort of thing?
Well, how you guys collaborate on the writing, and then, you know, sometimes I know, Nick, you will take the lead in terms of being the vocalist, or Rob will take the lead.
Rob is a cruel taskmaster.
He beats us.
Who demands that we do all of his writing chores for him.
Yeah, I've never written a single takes the credit. Word or anything. No.
Rob does.
So when Nick is singing, it's just because Rob doesn't feel like it?
Yeah.
I'm lazy.
Rob can't be bothered.
Most of the time I'm just lazy. No, I mean, the way we write is there's no rules. There's absolutely no rules. And sometimes I'll write a song and I'll have the lyrics. Like Ghost Rock, the song that we just played, you know, I wrote that song and brought it to the table, and I actually wrote the second guitar part to it, which Nick was playing, but Nick took that guitar part and kind of turned it into his own, and he strengthened it and he added his own style to it. There's other songs, which is the complete opposite. We're like, or it's the same thing, but Nick will do it. Nick will write the song and even write like a guitar part for me, and then I'll kind of add my own thing. There's other songs that we have, like off this album. Fictitious Business is one of the songs. Man of a Thousand Regrets and Dark Bathrooms, where we both just 50-50, you know, wrote it together. Either he'll write the first half and I'll write the second half, or vice versa. Sometimes we'll completely collaborate on the lyrics together. We'll sit there in a room together and do it together, and you know,
write songs when together. Actually, the cool thing about this, the what we've done new on this album is that there would be, you know, Rob would have a piece, and he would say, "Hey, check this out," and then I would just like bring like a, you know, like some random chorus from a song that I had written. That didn't really work out, and I would just like take a piece from that and stick it on the end, and all of a sudden we have this really weird song that somehow works. That kind of like opened it up for us, which I'm really excited for us to write again, just because now that we kind of have that aspect of it, there's so many different things we can do now, you know.
So your songs go through a lot of changes before you guys sit down to actually record them, then. Mm-hmm. Sounds like.
Yeah, like, I mean, with Fictitious Business, there's the song Fictitious Business. There's, like, the first half of it. That's what I wrote, and I thought that was the end of the song right there, when it – just that first half. And I brought it to Nick, and I was like, this is it. This is a new song. And then the next day he calls me up. He was like, dude, there's this piece that I wrote, like, over a year ago, and we have to tag it on to the end, and which is the second half of Fictitious Business, and it works so well, and it's – you know, and that's the thing. Like, Nick and I have so many little bits and pieces, all these little unfinished parts that we can just puzzle together.
Well, and there's always, like, so, you know, having multiple songwriters in a band is always kind of an ace in the hole, just because not only do you have just an abundance of songs to choose from, you have the ability to, you know, write a bunch and then be choosy about what you want, as opposed to taking everything that you write and going, okay, we have to have an album with 12 songs, so we have to use it all. I mean, there's songs that Rob and I will write that will never even see the light of day, just because, you know, you write other ones that are so much better. You're just like, all right, well, sorry, those they lose.
Does that ever present challenges, though, with, like, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing? Or do you guys understand each other's style of writing, you know, so well that you can work almost as one songwriter?
I think that it's gotten a lot better, and now it's, I mean, basically what I'm saying is, when we first started playing, Nick and I were pretty different, and, you know, I had more of like a rough, edgy, like really kind of a sloppy, abrasive edge to me, and Nick was very kind of like folk, you know, indie folk, very melodic, and
I had just gotten out of a relationship. I wasn't very trusting. And the last person really burned me.
And at first, the way it was, I had, you know, kind of like my songs, and he had his songs, and they, they kind of complemented each other, but you could tell that, you know, those were like the Nick songs, and then there were the Rob songs. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is, I mean, Nick and I have been in this band for like 3.5, maybe even 4 years now, and we've both learned a lot from each other. You know, I've become a lot more melodic. Nick has taught me how to sing harmonies, which I had never done before, and just understanding harmonies has helped my songwriting. And then on Nick's side, he's gotten heavier, gotten edgier, more aggressive with his playing, and so we're meeting more in the middle.
Is that a dig on my weight, dude?
You're saying you're much less like a fluffy bunny than you used to be.
Exactly.
You guys ready for another live song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play?
Let's do
My guests are Death to Anders. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Let's talk a little bit about the Central Second Collective. You guys have really allied yourselves with some really cool bands. I think at one point or another I've interviewed all of the bands in your little collective. Just for our audience who may not be aware of it, tell me what the Central Second Collective is and what its purpose is.
Well, at first, you know, when we started playing in L.A. like 3 years ago, this was like before we even knew about this wonderful area called Silver Lake and you know, Kill Radio and all the and Radio Free Silver Lake and all these great, you know, people and this wonderful community. And so we didn't the bands that we saw were, you know, very kind of territorial, and they thought everything was this big competition and they only thought of themselves. And so we ended up finding a couple bands that wanted to do stuff as a team, which was the Transmissions, the Happy Hollows, and One Trick Pony. And so we kind of stuck together as a team and played shows together and kind of created this thing called the Central Second Collective. Since then, we came into the whole Silver Lake community and realized that there's this whole world beyond that with so many great bands, including, you know, Radars to the Sky and Rademacher, who Nick and I saw last night, and
Henry Clay People,
Die
Rockers Die. I mean, by forming our own, like, by reacting to the way we thought the music community was in Los Angeles, just by, you know, it's just kind of isolated and every band for himself, we created this thing. But then it got to a point where we kind of like turned into our what we were fighting against by kind of insulating ourselves and being this little group. So eventually we kind of got out there and met a whole bunch of other bands that really kind of opened our eyes to the talent and the camaraderie that can exist, you know, around here, which we didn't really think it was there before. So
any thoughts on what it is that seems to pull bands into this kind of isolationist vibe that you're talking about? You think it's like a self-protective thing, or is it the LA scene perpetuated in some way?
I don't know what it's like outside of LA, because I've never been in a serious band outside of LA, so I couldn't say if it's just LA. But it's hard. What it comes down to is that the music business is a really difficult thing, and it also because of the competition and because of, you know, how difficult it is, bands can feel and band members can feel very vulnerable.
The supplies, I mean, I don't know, there's just so many bands. I mean, you guys have been in a bunch of bands, especially around here. Like, what do you guys want to say?
It's partially a supply and demand issue, and it's partially, you know, if you're faced with any... It's a difficult ladder to climb, and so there's two natural responses. One is going to be every man for himself and get what you can, and the other is going to be we're going to sort of band together and strengthen numbers thing, and we opted for the latter. I mean, it's really, not only has it been a lot more fun feeling like we're surrounded by, you know, it's friends all the time we're playing gigs with, as opposed to, you know, quote-unquote competition.
Yeah, and especially like the last couple of years, just playing with all these, you know, the quote-unquote Silver Lake bands, they're just so friendly, and you know, they come to all our shows, we come to all their shows, and, I mean, it's a support group. That's what it is.
Not to mention having the bands, you know, all these friends and other bands that we see all the time also, it makes it the ability to put shows together with like-minded bands, so a crowd isn't there just to see one band because they like that style of music and they don't want to see the metal band that's after or the funk band that came before.
Right.
You know, so we can have three, four bands that are all roughly, you know, in the same genre. And you know,
so you guys have probably gained a lot of fans from the fans of your friends' bands.
Exactly.
So
yeah, we all do. Exactly. And that's the point. You know, that's why... We stick in Silver Lake, and we don't necessarily do the Strip because they don't really pay attention to genre-specific bands. I mean, they'll put the funk band in front of the metal band there.
Whatever sells tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and also, with Silver Lake, too, it's like there's so many venues within a small... It's all compacted, whereas, I mean, we used to play on the west side at, like, you know, places in Venice and stuff like that, where there's really no... there's nothing there. I mean, there's venues there, but it's not really artist friendly. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's just kind of.
What about types of venues that you know you prefer to play in? I mean, there's you guys can get kind of loud, so obviously you don't want to be in a tiny space where you're blowing everyone out of the room. On the other hand, you guys can also get kind of quiet, and you know you get that intimacy with an audience, with the fans that are close to you and really paying attention to the music. What do you think is sort of the ideal room for you guys to play in, or does that matter?
Well, right now, I mean, there's three main venues that we play at are the whole Silver Lake ones, which is the Echo, Spaceland, and the Silver Lake Lounge. And I mean, they're all a little different, but what I like about them is, I mean, they're big. They're all big enough that we can get really loud in, but they're all small enough that it's very intimate. And it doesn't really matter where you're standing, if you're in the back or in the front. You know, you can hear it fine. You can get a good view of the band. And
it's weird too. Like the more serious you get, and the more you want to kind of expand your fan base or whatever you want to call it, you also have to start taking into account, to some extent, the viability and how much the venue that you're playing at is kind of supposedly a scene, quote unquote, mm-hmm. with like the press. Because if you're playing at Spaceland, it's a lot easier to get the press's attention as opposed to if you're playing, you know, at some random hole in the wall that nobody's heard of. For whatever reason, that brings along with it, you know, some sort of stamp of approval if you got a gig at the Echo.
Right.
You
know? Right.
So
let's listen to another track from your new album. What do you guys suggest?
Let's go to three.
Yeah. All right, let's throw this on. We'll come right back. You're listening to Death to Honors on Is Good on killradio.org.
Up the station, hell bent on tending to herself.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the band Death to Anders. We're having a grand old time here in the Kill Radio studio. So we were talking a little bit before about the business of music. What are you guys doing on the business end of things to sort of get this new album out there and let people know where to get it and all those things?
Well, luckily, Rob went spent 6 months last year taking some business courses, so we kind of have a better idea as to kind of how to organize ourselves. So we'll be making a pretty big press push this time, and in a way that's not scattered and pointless. You know what I mean?
Have you learned some lessons through doing it in a scattered and pointless way before?
Well, I mean, scattered and pointless, there's a couple different ways you can look at that. One is, you know, you just send stuff out to a bunch of random places and never follow up, you know, whatever. And then also scattered and pointless can be, you know, like for example, for this album, you want everything to kind of impact at the same time. So we're sending everything out all at the same time to kind of, so that everybody kind of hears it all at the same time. What we're doing is, you know, Nick's been researching a lot of blogs and stuff. We were just doing a lot of press research, you know, just hitting up blogs, hitting up magazines and newspapers. And now we have these CDs, we're actually picking them up today, where we can just, you know, stuff the envelopes that we've already made and just send them all out.
We've made some relationships too.
Yeah.
I mean, with the LA community, mostly, like, just we've met a lot of people that, you know, that have, they either do blogs or they're a part of like some sort of, you know, online magazine or you know, some sort of press or whatever. I mean, it being in the scene long enough, kind of, you know, eventually you get to know everybody, and mm-hmm. that definitely helps, as opposed to, you know, I mean, when we came out with our first album, we decided to do all of like our press research like after we had the albums, and we were just kind of sending it out randomly whenever. We didn't really have a focused date to kind of like circle the wagons around, like this release date. We've kind of set it in advance, and then over the coming months, we've just kind of like worked towards that date and set everything towards that, and that seems to help, you know.
What works out more for you guys in terms of the financial side of things? Is it selling albums or is it selling out shows?
We do neither, so...
what is the aspiration there, though? Is it to be known as, you know, to be able to make money performing at a really, you know, well-packed show? Or is it just, you know, sort of looking at, see how many things you sold on CD Baby and iTunes today?
I think they both go hand in hand. I mean, we're not, our dreams aren't to be, you know, like millionaire rock stars or anything like that. But what we all want to do is we want to be able to.
Nick's dream is to be a millionaire rock star.
But we have, realistically,
but as a band,
we want to be able to make enough money doing what we do so that we can quit our day jobs and really focus on the music. And I think, like I said, it goes hand in hand. You know, you're going to be selling more CDs, and you're going to be playing bigger venues with more, you know, selling out venues or playing at larger venues. And I mean, that's what would have to happen in order for us to quit our day job. And that's what we're working up to. So
cool. You guys want to do another live song?
Yeah. What we got? Everyday Life?
Yeah, Everyday Life.
So this song is actually a very old song that we wrote before we even knew Nick and Pete. I mean,
thank you for that.
John and Pete, sorry. And it's off our little bonus CD called Drive-In that if you pre-order our album before the 15th, you will get it for free on our MySpace page. You can pre-order it.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Everyday life gets me up at 8. And everyday life gets you up so late. Thank you.
kind of life that all these people read about us. There must be something more to life than what all these people read about us. I knew a dog, and his voice box was cut out. Still to this day, I always knew it was my fault. Where's this kind of life that all these people read about? Something more to life than what all these people read about us. I'd never let them in. Feelings, they come deep, 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 deep. Oftentimes you let them win. Everyday life gets you up so late.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Death to Anders is my guest. myspace.com/deathtoanders. What makes for a good live performance for you guys? I mean, aside from people coming out and supporting you, how do you know after you finish doing a set, you look around the stage at each other and nod and know that it's been a good show? What are the kind of criteria that you use?
I like to feed off the energy of the people in the crowd and also the bandmates as well. If the crowd's really digging it, then I get more pumped up, and then the more I get pumped up, the more the crowd digs it, and then all the band members, you know, get pumped up too. So we all kind of work together with that.
And he starts taking his clothes off, and it's just
gets nasty.
I don't know, man. It's hard to really. You don't want to base everything off of the way like the crowd reacts too much. Just because sometimes people are just so ambivalent, or they might not even show how they feel. They just kind of like, and especially in Los Angeles, there's a lot of people that just, you know, they'll stand there and stare at you like you're a jerk, and then after the show they'll be like, wow, you were great.
It's
like,
best show I ever saw.
Where the hell were you, man, when we were rocking out up there? But at the same time though, you know, it's always like the best feeling when you see people just really kind of, when you break them of that habit of being self-conscious about what they're doing, and they're just kind of like jamming out with you, you know.
Dude, I unfolded my arms during that song. That's how good it was.
I was bobbing my head and I punched my neighbor and everything was great.
And what about a bad show? What, you know, think to some shows that you guys did that maybe didn't go as you had hoped. And what were the elements of that you want to make sure don't happen again?
Yeah. We played in Anaheim one time, and there were
At a Klan rally? Or?
Dude, yeah, it was bad, man. It was, we came in there and nobody was there at first, which, I mean, whatever. We were like, oh, nobody's here, bummer. And then we left to get some food, and then we came back, and it was full. Like, we were driving up, and the parking lot was full, and we were like, holy crap, this is awesome. And then we go in, and there's, it's like a bunch of, like, 45-year-olds with, like, leather vests. Like, I don't know what, they looked like motorcycle freaking secret agents or something. And there were, it was a two-piece of, like, these crazy, like, metal shredders. And they had no drummer. It was just, they were playing to a drum track. And it was this crazy bass player and this crazy guitarist. And they were shredding up there, like, I don't even know, man. But the
guitarist had a fan on his face to blow his hair back.
Yeah. He had a fan on his face. That's awesome. And he was playing in his socks, which I thought was kind of weird.
I loved it.
Yeah, and he had like
a... So it's not the best opening act for you guys.
Yeah, you know. And then as soon as they were done, everybody stood outside of the door in the front. They didn't leave. That was like, I thought that was like the biggest slap in the face, because they didn't just leave. They just stood outside as we were playing, except for one dude who was like this crazy, like, British dude.
He was wasted,
and he kept requesting us to play Wonderwall, like the whole, it's Wonderwall, yeah! And we were like, all right, dude. We just kind of played, and it was also one of those gigs, too, where, you know, they didn't have enough mics, so we had to, like, share one, and they didn't have all the gear.
Of course, the irony is that we played a good show.
It was
a good show, and I think the guy enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So it was a good performance on your side, but you missed that connection with the audience that really makes it worthwhile.
played a dead room.
The upside was that we totally didn't give a shit, and we just kind of played, and it was great. After like three songs, we were like, dude, this is awesome. It doesn't matter what happens. We forgot about, I mean, we'll get like weird about screwing up or whatever. It didn't matter, you know? It just kind of...
With all your experience playing live, has that changed as well? Like, since you guys started, in terms of how much you care about, you know, doing it right or how you're perceived, is the way you present yourselves... evolved.
There were a couple shows where we played where, you know, like, I remember one show that I played, right off the bat, there were just some technical difficulties. Like, my pedal board kept on going out. I think, like, I broke a string or I was, like, way out of tune. And I took it very personally, and I had the worst time the entire show. And it was a well-attended show. It was at a great venue, and I just had the worst time, and because of that, I think that my performance sucked, because I just had that, like, negative dark cloud over my head during the whole thing. And I got off stage, and my girlfriend Melissa was like, man, you seemed really pissed off and upset, and you weren't on tonight. And I knew why. And so it's just one of those lessons that you have to learn. Just don't let any of that stuff go to your head. And no matter what, whether it's a technical difficulty problem or you're playing at some crappy venue in Anaheim that with a bunch of motorbike assholes, you know.
Well, see, they weren't even assholes. That's the thing. Like,
they just weren't.
Yeah, they weren't into what we did. Like, you know, whatever.
Except, no, those Scottish guys sang Elvis songs with me. They put 10 Elvis songs on the jukebox, and they knew all the words.
Yeah.
We drank beer and sang Elvis all night.
There was no shortage of characters at the show. There was, like, this humongous dude. Like, he was, like, 300 pounds, walked up to me, and he was telling me that he played for the Dodgers. And I was like, dude, I don't know. I don't know, man. And he's like, and he like bought us a round. I was like, awesome, that's cool, you know.
Whatever. Dodgers is the name of his band, probably. Well, before we run out of time, I want to get one more live song out of you guys, and then we'll sign off with another track from the album. We'll talk about, you guys have some shows coming up. You guys want to do another live song?
We
don't have to. I just threw that out there.
Should we do another one? I mean,
yeah,
do,
sure.
Let's do Great Plains.
You do Wonderwall, maybe? Oh, yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Let's do Great Plains.
You want to do Great Plains?
Yeah.
Let's
do it.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Death to Anders. myspace.com/DeathToAnders. That's A-N-D-E-R-S. Whenever you guys are ready.
Thank you.
for now as repair. You could end up first in line and make it fun. Thank you for the time it took his life. Or you could flee the state and come along for the ride. It's for a train. Every time you and I will always be best friends. You and I can take a ride all over the Great Plains States. And if you had to take off, I always wish you love. All the photographs, we need more hats and monocles with mustaches. Lies are on the credit cards we took, so take a look. Jerry rig the car with gaffer tape and cover up the bullet hole. Oh, the cop is dead. Now pop the trunk, load him in, for now he has repaid. Every time you and I will always be best friends, and you and I take a ride all over the Great Plains States. And if you had to take off, I always wish you love. Grab a car and all you need is more time.
Sweet. That was awesome, guys. Death to Anders on Is Good on killradio.org. Where are you guys playing next?
Well, we have a live interview tomorrow, KXLU demo listen from it's not an interview, actually. It's just a live performance. So the demo listen goes from 6 to 8, and we will be going on sometime around 7, 7:15. We'll be playing like a 20 to 30-minute set.
And then we also play – we have a record release show next Tuesday night at Bordner's in Hollywood.
With the Monolators.
With the Monolators, yeah, and Wait, Think Fast.
Wait, Think Fast, right?
Oh, awesome.
The show starts at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's 1652 North Cherokee.
That's Bordner's?
Bordner's, Cherokee and Hollywood Boulevard.
What would you have done if you didn't? If the CDs weren't available by Tuesday, are you gonna pass out coupons to pick up the CD later?
Yeah, well, I was actually talking to John driving up here, but I was like, I was kind of preparing for that possibility. And what I would do in that case was not really tell people until we were on stage, and then just kind of say, you know, thank you for coming to our CD release. Unfortunately, it wasn't here, but
and then run out of the. We'll just run.
But you can buy it on. You know,
yeah, that was a good way to artificially increase the demand for it. Hold it off. Show them that you have it, but then refuse to sell it.
Or just like, ooh, that's a good idea. We'll be selling it at the door, and then like give them coasters after they give you money. Just be like, here you go, and then
just give them a bunch of blank CDs.
Or we could sell it to them. They'll open it up. There won't be a CD in there.
You just give them the sleeve.
Yeah. And then in order to get the CD, they have to come to our next show.
Oh, dude, peace.
Right. We give them half the CD, and then they could tape the other half. All right, guys. Thanks so much for coming in again. You guys rock as usual. This episode will be available for download from myspace.com/thisisgood later today and podcast on iTunes. Let's leave with one more track from the CD. What do you guys want to play? All right, cool.
Song's called Doll.
You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org.